this is where Texas politics gets interesting. Here again are two guys named Jason, some great guests, and cold Texas beer for another smart conversation on Y'allitics, the unofficial political podcast of Texas.
Hey everybody, we are back at the Community Beer Company in Dallas. It's just to the west, right, of downtown Dallas. Northwest.
Okay. It's a 35
A little bit north and a little bit west, so northwest.
And 183.
Yeah, right off of 35E and Commonwealth, I think it is. Great place. I think that this is, it's got to be one of the top five patio spaces in Dallas.
It's good. It's kind of secluded too, which is kind of nice that you're not on top of everybody else.
Yeah.
And I'm a creature of habit, so I always get the same thing usually wherever I go.
Yeah, what are you having?
I'm having a house beer.
You do always get the
H-A-U-S,
same thing.
H-A-U-S, the German spelling.
You're an old man. You get the same exact thing every time. I, on the other hand, try something different every time, and today I'm having the Mesa Cerveza, and it's good.
What does that mean?
It means table beer.
Table beer. That's about what it is right now, huh?
Or beer table, if you think about it, because in Spanish, you flip-flop the words.
Beer table.
Beer table. Whatever it means, it's good. So you just got back from a road trip.
We just took a road trip to Austin. Listen, we've been trying to...
When he says we, I didn't get to go, because apparently that's not in the Y'allitics budget. I don't know.
Well, Wheeler always demands the plane, and of course we're on the...
Car service, you know.
We're on the bus on the way down. So anyways, we got back in one piece. You know, here's what's hilarious. Quick side note to this. We took our producer, Mike McCardle, with us too. And Michael doesn't go out in the field very much like we do and interview folks. And on the way back, we had to stop at Walmart as the sun's setting in Austin, in Georgetown. We made it up a few minutes north. And Daryl, our producer, pops the hood. We have to do some car work, some car maintenance.
What?
On the fleet car.
Y'all really should have taken the bus.
The Y'allitics fleet car. We had to change a headlight. And I think the headlight lasted about 20 miles.
Oh,
and it went out. By the time we got back to Dallas, it was like we're driving like half blind.
You've got a bigger problem than it's not the bulb.
Yeah. So anyways, listen, we have been trying to get an interview with the brand new House Speaker, Dustin Burrows. He was just elected this term to lead the House.
After a lot of infighting, I'll add.
There was a lot of infighting. It was the Democrats who ended up getting him across the finish line.
It was.
But Burrows has done what Republicans wanted.
Yeah.
The biggest thing, obviously, is school vouchers. Of course, Greg Abbott invested a lot of money to defeat some Republicans who didn't agree with him on this one issue. But Burrows, Dustin Burrows, a Republican from Lubbock, he's been there for a decade as a state lawmaker. He has created relationships behind the scenes, and one of those is with the Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick. If you remember any of the inside politics of Austin, the House and the Senate never got along. You know, Dade Phelan, who's the former House Speaker,
also a Republican
from Beaumont. He never got along at all with Patrick. They fought mainly over school vouchers.
So then let me ask you, because you're on the outside looking in at all of this, but you're close enough in there. Is this Republican Party then in Texas united now? Because there have been several years now where it seems like you've got these two offshoots of the same party sort of battling against each other for control.
We're going to find out in March of 2026 when Ken Paxton and Jennifer.
That is true.
Are competing against each other.
You have been in Austin a long time. This is a very political answer.
You like that non-answer
answer?
Yeah. But here's the thing that I'd met the speaker once before on a Zoom call. And of course I knew who he was as being a member for that long. It was clear, talking to him in the interview you're about to see and hear in just a moment, he has complete command of that house. And you need to if you're running it. But I didn't know him well enough to say he's changed at all, but it was obvious he had clear command in there. And there have been motions to vacate the chair, which basically means, hey, we're going to fire him.
Yeah.
A fellow Republican wanted to do that. I think got two votes out of 150. So it's obvious that Burrows has a clear command. Listen, we wanted to talk about all kinds of things. There's a month left in the legislative session here. We saw school vouchers pass. Mm-hmm. What has not been talked about at all is the billions more that was passed for public schools, public school funding. What's gonna happen to the Texas lottery? What's gonna happen with THC? Is that going to be banned in Texas? There are a lot of things still on the table besides vouchers, besides public school funding. And we had questions for Speaker Burrows, and we went to Austin. We got to go into his private conference room there behind the House chambers on the second floor of the Texas Capitol, and we had a bunch of questions for him. Here they are. Mr. Speaker, thanks for having us here.
Happy to be here. Thank you.
We appreciate that. We're closing in on the final month of the legislative session here. Anything that you did not expect in this new position you have?
Look, the House is meant for, you know, surprises, which means when things happen, you just kind of go with what it is. But it's been a good session so far. I'm very happy with where things are at. I'm happy with the House's relationship with the Senate, the governor. I think we're on track to have a very good session.
A lot of differences this session here, and you've done what your predecessors have not, getting school vouchers passed. How soon could the governor sign this landmark piece of legislation into law?
By the end of this week.
By the end of the week?
By the end of the week.
That's a pretty huge deal then to have it done during the session.
It is. It is. I mean, you know, we passed some big priority bills. We had our first bill signing today. We're going to have another bill signing, I'm assuming, in the next 2 weeks on school choice. And we're getting big things done for Texans.
Let me ask you about DOGE, since that was the one passed today. What kind of cuts should Texans expect from this new DOGE committee, this new DOGE law that passed?
So there's going to be cuts. But I think the biggest thing that it's going to do is it's going to look at all the regulations that have been passed and are being considered. It's going to make sure that they're done in plain English. It's going to look for redundancies. And it's going to try to minimize the number of regulations. I mean, if you look at the regulatory burden on the average business in Texas, it's too big. And this is designed, Texas DOGE, to streamline that.
What do you think they'll find?
They're going to find all sorts of things. You look at Texas DOGE and the Texas House already. I mean, who would have predicted that Giovanni Capriglione and his committee would have looked at some of the Medicaid contractors and what they've discovered? And they're still working hard to uncover and find waste, fraud, and abuse.
Is there going to be a significant cost savings, do you think, to taxpayers?
I sure hope so.
At the end of the day?
That's going to be the intention.
Let's talk about ESAs here. There are a number of private schools in Texas that I've heard from that just aren't interested in vouchers. They're afraid there might be some future accountability for those schools if they take the money. Should lawmakers do anything to incentivize private schools so there really is school choice and parents can really send their children wherever they want?
Here's the good news. For those private schools that have those concerns and do not want to participate, they do not have to. For all the ones that there are several others that would actually love to participate in this program. And I think we're going to see some of the private schools that have been in business and operation for a long time in this state. When I think about it, I think about the Catholic Church and the schools they have. I think you're going to see them expand and grow and provide more opportunities because I think they're very excited about this program.
What do you tell these other schools outside the parish schools that might have concerns that there may be some future accountability tied to this money?
This bill makes sure that is not going to be the case. It makes sure that private schools are going to be able to operate the way they always have. They have big, significant safeguards and protections, and they also will always have the right not to participate if they so choose.
Lost in the conversation about vouchers is the historic amount of money put towards public education. How big of a deal was that?
It's the biggest bill we've passed this session.
Why do you think it was lost in this conversation?
I don't know. I mean, it shouldn't have been. We've held a press conference about it. It is HB2, meaning when we look at numbers, the only thing more important is the budget, which we are constitutionally obligated to pass. For the Texas House, it is the big win of the session. And I feel it has a lot of momentum, even in the Texas Senate and with the governor. So it does a lot of good things, takes care of our SPED children, our special education, deals with full day pre-K funding, a lot of the things that we've been hearing about. And I think our public education community is very excited about HB2.
Did the passage of HB2, the public school funding, did that squelch concern from critics, rural Republicans who might have been concerned about vouchers, do you think?
I don't know if the two are necessarily tied together or not, but what I can say is House Bill 2, combined with a few of the other programs that we're doing in addition to that, means this session we will have been committed to spending more on public education than in the history of Texas, even after being adjusted for inflation. That is a historic win, and we're taking care of some much needed things. Teacher pay raises, you know, special education funding, full day pre-K, things that I think are very important that we hear about and very excited about.
One more ESA question here. Do you anticipate expanding the voucher program at all in the future? Do you think that $1 billion of the biennium will be consumed?
So look, we hope that there's a huge demand for it. I think there will be. I think that as soon as that, you know, we have this program available, people sign up for it, we're going to see a huge demand for that. And if the demand is there and the children are being educated, we're going to have excitement. And I can see future legislators wanting to continue to grow it and invest in it because it's going to work.
But you're expecting a huge demand.
I think there's going to be a big demand. I really do.
Let's talk about the budget for a moment here. House and Senate budgets both leave $40 billion on the table that can't be spent unless you lawmakers break the spending cap. Is that a possibility at all, do you think?
I don't think we will. Look, I mean, we don't know what the economic certainty is going to be. We don't know where it's going to be. I think it's always good to leave money in the bank. I think it's very good to basically leave some money available so that, you know, when we return to future legislative sessions, that we have a bit of a cushion. I think Texas taxpayers expect us to be responsible with their money. They expect us to be responsible with budgeting, and they may want to make sure that we don't put ourselves into deficit spending, which we don't do in Texas.
What happens to that money? Does it stay on the balance sheet? It doesn't go to the rainy day fund, does it?
Yeah, so there's a certain amount of money that's going to go to the rainy day fund, and I think there's some additional monies beyond that that I would like to hold back for next session to make sure that, you know, we're not bare cabinet when we return, potentially.
Not bare cabinet?
No.
I haven't heard that one. Fiscal conservatives in your party are they're critical about the state budget increasing again this session. Hey, what do you tell those critics, especially at a time when we're all watching what's happening in D.C., where agencies are being eliminated, people are being fired, et cetera?
I'm going to push back real quick. I'm not so sure they're really fiscal conservatives. I think there's some people who want to make their political mark by complaining about everything that we do so they can show a differentiation. That's politics. Does it make them more fiscally responsible or opportunists? I don't know. I'll let people be the judge of that. But if you look at our budget, we have 5 spending constraints. We are underneath all of those, including growing the budget beyond population plus inflation, a bill that we passed in 2019, historic, something I fought for the first 2 sessions I was here. We have 5 different spending restraints. We do not have deficit spending. We do not have a D.C.-style budget. I'm always amazed when I talk to people, and I think sometimes they, you know, understand what's happening in D.C. where they haven't balanced a budget in I don't know how long. They have deficit spending over and over. They have debt. We don't have those things in Texas. It is a fiscally responsible budget, period, the end, which is why you see the House and Senate Republicans agree on it, because that's what's important.
But as far as the actual expenditures growing over the bienniums, what do you say to that? Is there, I've heard some people say, listen, the state's growing too, but is there room to reduce overall state spending?
$51 billion of the budget is being spent to maintain or continue to drive down property taxes. We're putting money into transportation and roads where it's growing. We're putting money into water, which is very important, and maybe probably not even enough that we're spending at this point in time. If you look at these priorities, I think they're exactly what Texans want and deserve.
One other budget question here. Trump administration's following through on its promises to secure the border. The number of illegal crossings, as we've all seen, has gone down to a trickle since President Trump took over here. Why does Texas need to keep spending billions of dollars down there if Trump has fixed the problem?
So there are still some things that we're going to continue to need to do. But we are talking, we're working through it. Very proud that we have a president in the White House, first time in a while, that actually cares about securing the southern border. And with what they're doing and the investment they're making, I'm not so sure we're going to have to spend everything that we have budgeted for it because Trump has stepped up.
What else does the state still need to do, though, with Trump stepping up?
So there's still tons of infrastructure down there that needs to be done. There's still going to be a need for some of our state guard to be down there. There's still going to be some things that we're going to need to do to maintain, you know, what we've already started and what we've been doing. And we also have, you know, some wall that we've continued to build, and we need to finish out what we've started.
Let's talk about the lottery for a moment here. The House's budget passed the chamber with zero funding for the lottery commission. And then you guys doubled down on it again with a second non-binding resolution. Is the Texas lottery going away?
We're going to have that conversation still. I mean, that is, you know, in the next 30 days, there's going to be a real conversation about, are we going to keep it? And if we do, what changes need to be made so that people have confidence that it is a legitimate gaming operation?
Should the lottery be abolished? We saw the lottery director resign the other day. The lieutenant governor has plenty of questions. I know you guys do too. Should the lottery be abolished?
I'm not there yet, but we're continuing the conversations to basically get a sense of where we need to be on that.
How concerned are you with what's going on at the lottery right now?
Well, we're concerned enough. You've seen the votes of my members on the Texas House floor. You've seen the headlines. You've seen some of the bills that are being filed to address it. I think that there's a conversation that will play out over the next 30 days, and we'll see where we get to on it.
Tell me about your relationship with Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick, though, because you've done what your predecessors have not. You've cultivated a relationship with him and successfully worked with him to pass some huge Republican legislation, the public school funding, ESAs. What are you doing that your predecessors did not?
Well, I can't make comments of where things have went awry or what's not been the past, but I have respect for the Lieutenant Governor. We don't always agree on things, but there's a lot of common ground that we have. There's a lot of the same worldview that we have. But I'll tell you, it's whether it's business, whether it's politics, whether it's any other relationships, the whole thing is to continue the conversation over and over. And so I think the one thing that he and I are doing well is we're keeping the line of communication open and we're talking about things as they come up.
How often do you talk to him?
Frequently.
Do you? I mean, weekly, or is it more than that, I guess?
At least weekly.
Okay. A few last questions here, Mr. Speaker. Affordability is becoming a huge problem in Texas, as you likely know. Housing costs, insurance costs, property taxes, which the legislature is addressing here. Should the legislature be doing more to address these specific issues affecting Texans in their wallets and pocketbooks?
We're trying to do more, and I think we will do more. If you look at housing affordability, you know, one of the biggest costs in there, one of the biggest hidden costs is time. So if you look at new construction, the time from actually purchasing a piece of land and getting permits and trying to actually get something built, it's too long. It's unnecessarily long. And time is money. That's capital that's out there in the marketplace. We're trying to speed up third-party permitting, and we have bills in both chambers to address that. We're looking at other creative ideas to try to make sure housing affordability is there. We have a slew of bills dealing with health insurance costs, trying to figure out whether or not some of these mandates, you know, have made them more expensive. So we are looking at these things and trying to figure out what we can do in the state of Texas to make things more affordable.
How about property insurance? We've had companies leave the state of Texas.
Property insurance, absolutely. And there's a series of bills out there talking about that, looking at that. We've heard lots of people say it's gone up.
There are a number of open seats next year, competitive races for U.S. Senate, Attorney General, Comptroller. Do you plan to make any endorsements at all?
Ask me again after session.
After session. Do you plan to run for anything else?
I do not.
Okay. I've heard some chatter, and I don't know how serious it is, but do you expect there to be any special sessions this summer?
You know, obviously, if we get the priorities done, we get the things done for Texas, I'm hopeful we don't have one. I think we're on track not to at this point in time, but we're not going to know until, you know, June 2nd, sine die.
And THC is another kind of flashpoint issue that a lot of folks have. Where do you think that's going to end up? I've heard the Lieutenant Governor say, listen, if the House doesn't pass this, we don't get this passed, that he would force a special session.
Look, we've had committee hearings on it. I am concerned about many of the products in the marketplace. If you look at some of the Chinese vape and some of the places it's being sold, I think there's bipartisan support for banning a good number of those products. I think there's some products people want to have the conversation about keeping for access. I think that all of that's going to be coming to the floor very soon. The members are going to try to figure out what is the right balance.
Total ban, do you think the members would support that?
We're going to find out.
At the end of the session, how are you going to determine success for your first session as Speaker?
Look, you know, I want to make sure that all of the members had an opportunity to represent their districts. I want to make sure all of the members who've come down here to be good representatives of their district are able to say they felt that they were fully heard. They were fully able to advocate for their districts, that they've had legislative success. And you know, it's really gonna be about the other members' success that's gonna define whether I feel I was successful as Speaker or not.
Democrats helped get you elected. You end up passing these behemoths of bills that Republicans really wanted, ESAs, et cetera. At the end of the day, do you think you've redeemed yourself at all with conservative colleagues who had questions early on?
You know, I don't think about things in those terms, right? You know, I've been here now for a decade, over a decade. I have friends on both sides of the aisle. You know, I think that they basically have supported me for a great many of reasons. Nobody was disillusioned that, you know, I have a conservative bent in the way I've legislated, the way I have a worldview. But I want to make sure that even if you don't have the same worldview, that you're going to be respected on that House floor. You're going to be able to bring legislation that works and solutions that work and that you're going to be heard and fully and meaningfully participate. So I think that's what's going to define success.
Mr. Speaker, thank you for the time, sir.
Thank you.
Getting all the answers. And you know, I appreciate that you did this because, like you talked about, it seems like vouchers, I mean, obviously that's a huge issue, and it has sort of taken up all the oxygen for the reporting that's been coming out of the legislature. So it's good to know and be able to put a pin in some of these other things and figure out where they are in the process right now as well. I know that you spoke to somebody who's very prominent on the other side of the aisle. Before we get to that, though, you were recognized a lot in the Capitol this time, weren't you?
I've been mistaken for a lot of people over the years. I've been mistaken for FBI agents, insurance guys,
criminal
adjusters.
At some point, right?
No, that was you. Okay. I've been mistaken for Jason Wheeler. I can't tell you how many times. We've talked about this on the podcast before. How they say, love watching you on Channel 8. I said, thanks a lot. I appreciate it. You know, appreciate you listening. Your money segments are fantastic.
You're like, that's the other Jason.
I'm like, yeah. Well, I work on them, but I clearly have more work to do. But when we're down there, we're walking into the extension. And a guy walks by and just has the biggest, it looks like a lobbyist, biggest smile on his face. Hey, Mr. Chairman, how are you?
And what did you answer back?
And I kind of smiled, and it took me a second to figure out, like, who is he confusing me with? And I said, no, sir, I'm not the chairman.
That's great.
He thought I was Brad Buckley, the veterinarian from Killeen, who is the chair of the House Public Education Committee.
Looking this up right now to see if I can see any likeness there. Brad Buckley, okay.
Trey Martinez Fisher says, hey, you guys look a lot alike when I was talking to him.
So it's more than one person who's...
Who else was it?
I see it.
Oh, in the Speaker's office.
I see it a little bit.
They had a similar profile.
I can see
in the Speaker's office. This is Chairman Buckley.
I'll put his picture
up. Yeah, there's some similarities there.
In the Chairman's office, I said, hey, we're about to interview the Speaker here. Do you have any flags? If you notice there, if you're watching this, we had flags in the video there with Speaker Burroughs. And when the people brought in the flags, they said, Mr. Chairman, where would you like us to put
To the left. A little more to the left.
I thought, surely you got to be kidding me. There was a fourth person as well. I can't remember who
That's
it was.
That's insane.
So when I got out to the floor and I was able to get Chairman Buckley's attention, I'm like, listen, for better or worse, people think that I look like you.
I've cussed a lot of people out today in your name.
But people like Buckley.
Oh, well,
both
that's good.
Sides, they respect him.
You want to be mistaken for somebody people like.
I know, yeah. Instead of being mistaken for you like I am quite often.
Well, you know, the difference between you and me is I would have let them continue making the mistake. Could somebody get me something to drink?
People in Dallas might recognize this one, too. The last thing, then we'll move on here. I used to get mistaken quite a bit for Brett Shipp.
Yeah, I can see that.
Well, Brett's older than I am. Brett, you know, I love you, but Brett's an investigative reporter, if you don't know Brett.
And that relationship was going to be with somebody.
And yes, and Brett wasn't afraid and isn't afraid to, you know, get into somebody's face to get the truth and get questions answered. And I was always afraid, Mr. Shipp.
No, that is not me.
not me at all.
Okay, so you talked about speaking with the Speaker here,
sure.
And you talked about part of the reason that he is even Speaker is because Democrats came together and helped him over the finish line because Republicans couldn't agree on who they wanted to go with. Has that benefited Democrats, though, in this state?
Hold on, you're getting ahead of us here, because I asked that.
I want to get right to
I asked
this.
That in just a moment. So the leader of the House Democratic Caucus is Gene Wu. He's a state representative from Houston. We've had him on the podcast before here, I believe. And that's one of the first questions I asked. I also asked is there any regret voting for him? One of the biggest things that you guys had was, you guys opposed, was school vouchers. Do you have any regret voting for that? And maybe more than anything, what can you claim as Democrats as a victory?
Right. Because you should be getting something if you helped to push this person into leadership.
Yeah, one lawmaker told me on the floor, listen, Jason, this is a defensive session for us as Democrats, he said. But others said, we get things that happen every day. We're still vice chairs of committees. Vice chair is better than no chair, right?
Right.
We're still vice chairs of committees. We get little things throughout the day. At the end of the day, though, you got to have something to show voters.
Yeah.
And that's what I think that some Democrats are concerned about, frustrated about. Gene Wu tells us here in just a second that, listen, if you have a problem with this, run for office yourself. Mm. Come down here and make a difference. That's what he did. That's what a lot of folks there in the legislature did. So we had a lot of questions for Representative Wu. Here they are.
Mr. Chairman, good to see you again. We are closing in on the final month of the legislature here. Are Democrats going to have any tangible victories to show that might end up at the governor's desk?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think people look at the legislature as just like, oh, we only pass a couple of bills here and there. But like the bulk of our work is the budget, is all these little administrative things here and there and hundreds of bills here and there. The whole point of Democrats fighting at the beginning to make sure that we were respected, that we were given like the ability to fight for our communities was about those things, right? I think because of our minority status, we're not going to have the big bills on the floor. but we have a lot of other bills on the floor. We have a lot of amendments and things that we got into those bigger bills that we don't necessarily talk about.
One member upstairs a few moments ago on the floor described this as a defensive session for Democrats. It was a Democrat who said that. Would you agree with that?
Sure. I mean, like, I think for the minority party, any session that you're not in the majority is a defensive session. That's just the nature of politics. So it's not a surprising thing at all.
At the end of the session, when the gavel drops, sine die, what will Texas Democrats look back on and consider success?
I mean, kind of to your point about being defensive thing, I mean, especially as the right is, I mean, the Republican Party is just going off the cliff in how extreme they've become. We've had to do more and more of the dealing with, as people are struggling to survive, as costs are going up, they're filing stuff about DEI and trans kids and all the stuff like what is this? Why are you doing this? You guys have already passed every single bill you could possibly want on all these things, and you want to keep doing this stuff instead of actually dealing with people's incomes, dealing with the rising cost of food, dealing with insurance companies are pulling out of the state. What are we doing about those? Right? And we don't have time, as much time to work on those, because we're dealing with the nonsense.
Let's talk about vouchers for a moment here. You said the other day after they passed, you said the fight's not over on vouchers. What's next?
So look, one, the bill, even if the governor signs it, which, you know, I would encourage people to start calling the governor and saying, hey, you don't need to sign this thing. You don't have to. You should listen to us.
But he wants it more than anybody.
But he is a politician nonetheless. And politicians, ultimately, you need to listen to the people who put you in office. And the public needs to tell them, you need to listen to us and not a couple of billionaires who wrote you big checks. At the end of the day, we are your bosses, not them, right? And if the governor decides that his bosses are actually four billionaires and Donald Trump's, then so be it. But the public needs to tell him, we are your boss. We are telling you to veto this bill.
But when you said that the fight's not over on vouchers, is there anything planned next? Is there legal action? Is there anything else that you can do
without going into too much detail about what the next strategy is? I think, one, the stuff doesn't go into effect for another 2 years, right? And if I think it would be a good time with those intervening 2 years, if the communities want to start electing members that will actually listen to them and actually do what their community has asked them to do and defend the community the way the community wants to be defended, you know, you could elect new people and come back and say, like, you know what, we were just kidding 2 years ago. We're going to pull this back, right? But we need a body and a governor who's willing to do that.
Vouchers were the big political battle, at least in the headlines here. Is there anything else that you guys see in the remaining 4 or 5 weeks here that you're really going after to try to stop?
I think in terms of just insane things, there's tons of insane things. But I think for the most part, the House has really like tamped down on it, or at least made an effort to, and tried to focus more on bills that actually move Texans forward and things that actually like makes people's lives better. I know that a lot of those pieces of legislation they're in the House. They're stuck in the House because the Senate is happy to rubber stamp anything that Governor Abbott or Dan Patrick puts on their desk. But I think the House, in looking at everything that's going on, is really asking the harder questions. Like, wait, why are we doing this? Is this something that's actually important for the people? Is this something that we've already covered multiple times? And given everything that's happening right now, is this really a priority? Or are other things dealing with things that directly affect people's lives, like income and food costs and everything else, are those more important?
Like affordability. And that kind of leads to my next question here too. Last time you and I spoke, it was right after Democrats got Dustin Burroughs elected to speaker. Burroughs went on to pass school vouchers. That's huge Republican priority. Is there any regret voting for Burroughs?
That's up to individual members. I think no matter what the choice was, our choice was between someone who has basically said that they would give us the ability to defend ourselves and speak up for our legislation versus somebody says, no, we'll cut you off at the knees. So no matter what happens with vouchers, I think those kind of like decisions are really clear. It's like, why would we ever work with somebody or give our vote to somebody that says you have no power, no place here?
Has Burroughs lived up to any of the thinking that Democrats had?
Look, I think, has Burroughs lived up to his word? I think that's for individual members to make their own decisions on. But a lot of the commitments, like making sure that Democrats have power in committee, making sure that our bills go through, making sure that people aren't just voting against us just because we're Democrats, and actually vote on the policy, I think those have, we've seen those, but like, let's wait till the end of the session to make a decision.
A few last questions here. Let me ask about THC. The House bills to ban THC is still in committee. Yep. It's a little different from the Senate version, obviously. The House wants to allow THC in beverages. Is this going to get to the House floor, do you think?
I don't know. And I think in the current form, both bills are just bans of different kinds, sure. Right? The Senate bill is a total and complete ban. Which is, I think, for the vast majority of people, is just a non-starter. I think for the House bill, essentially is a ban as well. If you're saying that you can only get it in alcoholic beverages, well, not everyone wants alcoholic beverages. That's kind of the point, right? And if you can only buy them in certain places, it's a ban. I mean, a ban is a ban, right? It's effectively a ban. I think what people are looking for, what the public has said repeatedly is like, look, adults like having this. Responsible adults can use this and it can be safe. It can be a great medicine for people who need it and for everyone else who just wants to have a good time and not have to chug down like six beers. You know, like why not this? I think what the public wants is a reasonable regulatory system. Neither of these bills in the current form are any sort of reasonable regulation.
Lieutenant Governor Patrick's threatening to force a special session if this doesn't pass the House. Do you expect to be back here during the summer for a special session at all?
I certainly hope not. I think one of the places where we would come back for a special session, it would not be THC. Because again,
what would it be?
It has to be something that is important and vital to the people of the state of Texas. And what I think what we might come back for is dealing with what is happening caused by the instability caused by the Republican tariffs, right? So the tariffs are burning through the country. We've not fully felt the impact of it because we've been living off of stored materials.
But what would the state role in that be, do you think?
I think there will be large number of job losses, people losing their homes. And I think people will be looking for assistance. The state, I think, is going to have to come in and provide assistance. I think things are going to get really bad.
You think so?
I think so.
Is there talk about that the legislature might have to act later this year?
No, and I think that's a real problem. I think most people are not talking about this, but look at the dollar valuation. Look at the valuation of the dollar. Look at 20 and 30 years U.S. bond, treasury bonds. They're dropping like a rock.
Everything but gold is.
Right? Gold's going up because instability, sure. Right? And more or less, like especially like the bonds, that is a vote on the future of America. If you don't believe that a country will be around in 30 years or 20 years or 10 years, well, you wouldn't buy a 20 or 30-year bond from them. And if you look at the reports from the shipping ports and stuff, shipping traffic is going to go down to zero, which then means that people are there are going to lose their jobs. The rail lines, people are going to lose their jobs. Overland shipping, trucking is going to have massive layoffs, and those will have ripple effects. Walmart gets 60% of its items from China. If those items are now triple the cost or just not available, how do they stay open?
If the president backs off on these tariffs, which it looks like he's caving right now, does that change things?
I don't think
the damage is done.
The damage is already done. I mean, and basically, like everyone else in China and Canada, all said, we don't care that you removed the reciprocal tariffs. We're keeping ours in place because you guys seem to change your mind every 3 days. So I don't think it's going to matter. The die has been cast, and we're going to have to live with it.
And Texas has escaped the 2008 financial crisis. Texas, didn't get hit that bad.
Escaped better. Better than exactly, most other exactly. places. And I think that was because of NAFTA. Because so much traffic between the United States, Mexico, and Canada goes through Texas, we were buffered from it. But now we're in a trade war with Canada, Mexico, and China, who are our number one, number two, and number three largest trading partners. China last week said that they are canceling all LNG orders.
2026 election's coming up. What are you hearing that Democrats are focused on? What would you tell them to focus on?
I've not heard anything. I think for us, the session is the first priority.
Finishing it up
sure. And dealing with the things here. But like, I don't think my message, honestly, would be any different than what it's been. Is like, Democrats are going to focus on the things that people actually care about. We will always defend people being bullied. But our main defense is the defense of the American people, the defense of the middle class, right? And everything that we've done in the last 30 to 40 years has been about slowly eroding the stones that lift up the middle class, right? Public education, healthcare, public infrastructure, strong government, having great government jobs, all those things keep the middle class in the middle class. And all those things that we've now finally realized with the passage of the voucher bill and everything, that those things have been chipped away. And, you know, not to mix metaphors, but like, you know, we're the frog in the pot, and they've been turning up the temperature real slow. And now people are starting to think, hey, are we in a giant pot that has a fire under it?
Middle-class voters that are voting to the right.
Yep, so against their own interests.
So what do Democrats do then?
I think we, as people have their find out moments, as we're going through this year, and I think 2025 is going to be a year of finding out.
Yeah.
And really, Americans are going to find out the hard way that elections have consequences, that even inaction or non-voting is voting, and that you get what you vote for, right? And if you vote for policies, you vote for people who push policies that are bad for you, but you feel like, you know, they're speaking your language on social issues because they're told you who to hate, well, there are consequences for that. And I think what Democrats need to do is we need to stand right where we have always stood. And says Democrats have never moved from this spot. We have always, always been about fighting for the middle class, right? We have always been about education, about healthcare, about jobs, about doing all those things that make life possible in America. That people don't have to scrape and scrimp every single day for every single thing. We want to go back to America where, like, we want to go back to the Homer Simpson America, where you can have a decent job that takes care of a nice house, that if your spouse doesn't want to work, they don't have to work, and you can take care of three kids and whatever else. We want to go back to that. We want to go back to an America where Americans get to brag we are the best.
This is your first year leading House Democrats. Do you like the position?
Ask me in a few months.
At the end of the session?
Yeah, sure.
Do you have aspirations for higher office?
Who doesn't?
Mr. Chairman, good to see you again.